With fall in full swing, more moments call for more comfort. Mack Weldon's got all the essentials for comfortable, easy-to-layer clothes designed for cooler days and timeless style you can count on. Their new Ace line, inspired by their best-selling sweatpants, combines everyday comfort with long-lasting and effortless looks. Not flashy, just classic, always in style, and made from the world's most comfortable performance materials. Fall into comfort with Mack Weldon's Ace collection. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MACK25.
Coming at you live from the heart of Lincoln, America, this is Old School, sponsored by the Mercado by Certified Piedmontese, Nebraska Football Hall of Famer Jay Foreman and Austin Orman. Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
That's right, it is Old School on a fascinating day in Huskerland. Welcome to a Monday show brought to you by the Mercado by Certified Piedmontese. As my co-host Jay Foreman would say, we are on the stream. We just don't got the queen. We are getting our best and our brightest minds on our camera situation. So,
we are not
being seen. So, we just have our smiling faces up there on the very nice banner. So, cameras are a little stuck, a little funky. My usual fixes didn't work. So we are getting our best and brightest on the camera situation. But don't worry. Fear not. We are here. It is Old School with you from 3 to 6 p.m. today. Before we jump into the proceedings, we got a Cash Blitz keyword for you. Get your phone out. Get ready to text 508-777-1000. The word for Old School today, late, L-A-T-E, late. Text LATE, L-A-T-E, to 508-777-1000 for your chance to win $1,000 tomorrow around noon. You can also go to our website, theticketfm.com, and click on Cash Blitz. Enter the keyword LATE, L-A-T-E. Jay Foreman, they did it. They did it. They won a game. Again, they get to 5-1, but the way they did it. Nebraska football in a 34-31 win over Maryland is going to carry us through this first segment. We know there's some other discussions going on in Huskerland. We will get to that at 4 o'clock, but I do want to address the game because I think there's a lot of interesting stuff when it comes to the game. First of all, in pregame, I said, you can go back and check it right about 1:45 p.m. It's time for the offense to step up and win a game late. They did. First, come from behind, go ahead, drive to win a game. Since Nebraska beat Purdue 25-24, and Stanley Morgan Jr. caught the ultimate game-winning touchdown pass. It had been a while. And then the defense stands up. They get the stop. Maryland drove it a little bit, but never seriously threatened for the even the potential game-tying field goal. Again, not a pretty game necessarily, not a perfect game. Still a pretty atrocious third quarter where Nebraska's outscored 14-0. But, Jay, Nebraska handled the adversity. It came through it. And in back-to-back weeks, it's dominated in the fourth quarter in terms of yards and in terms of points. Again, not going to fool anyone by saying this is the greatest team known to man, but Nebraska's taken a step forward. It's proven it 2 weeks in a row now.
Yeah, I mean, look, a win is a win. You know, I think it's one of those things you got to learn how to win. And, you know, look, and it's going to take, I think this team, you know, at least up in, you know, through halfway through the season, you know, it's different ways they got to win. I think special teams, I think the last 2 weeks, I think number one, you got to take advantage of the opportunity that you have, right? You can't, you know, as many years that everybody's complained about the schedule being too hard, not ideal playing times, you know, whether we play at 11 o'clock in Purdue and whatever the heck you know, the excuses are. Now it's like you got to take advantage of it. You know, look, you played two probably the worst special teams units in the nation in the last 2 weeks, right? That's fine. But then you took extreme advantage of them to the point that it helps you win a game. And then you were able to get out of your own way. You know, you get stopped on fourth down. You stop them on fourth down. So you're showing some like little bit of grit and just ability to not go in the tank and just, you know, take your ball and go home. You get it, you know, you get a lead and then you end up losing the lead. And then it comes in when your back's against the wall and you drive down. Now, obviously it was set up by a return. Then you, you know, finish it off. And, you know, there's a lot more positives when you win a game or, you know, that instead of trying to say like the moral victories, there's more actually tangible positives. Obviously there's a lot of stuff that needs to get cleaned up like yesterday. And now we're at the point now in the season. if you want to get to where you want to get to, you got to start, taking some, steps forward and, in those areas and then getting that continuity together. But nevertheless, the ability to, win and play to the very end is something that hadn't been around in Nebraska in quite some time. And there was times that, prior, where this is what people were like, oh, I just want us to play hard. I just want us to compete. I want us to just do that. So now you got it. Yes, you can still complain, but also don't forget where you came from because, very easily, you could be at a different schedule or a different record right now.
Matt Rhule had something to say about that in his press conference. I don't remember exactly which cut it was, but it was something to the effect of maybe I haven't done it as fast as some other places, but we have it a lot better now than we did 2 years ago, right? There are steps in the right direction. Brad,
you can't. There's no way you can. You can't say now. You got better players now. In some places, you guys are better players, but you do. It's a better team. The college football's changed. I think it's a little bit clear now. You have revenue sharing and all that. You probably have a better grasp now on the collective, or at least up until this year, you had better grasp on collective. Probably have a better grasp on that Big Ten. But then overall, it is a better team. He probably understands the dynamics of this new age of college football a lot better and clearer. And so, the whole year three thing, that's great, and it is like real because, you kind of, when you go into places, and I don't, by no means do I compare Nebraska to Temple and Baylor.
Mm-hmm. You can't.
But it's not even close. No. But when you go into places like the ones before, and there were some of those things before where you got to, you guys think you were working hard. You think you were playing hard. You think you really wanted to, we got to get you out of your own way. So there is some things that are comparable. But when you go in there, it takes a lot of time because a lot of that stuff that's like you're changing people's behavior. They're like, and it's not, generally when you get in the stadium or in the, whatever, the field or whatever they're doing over there in the off season, it's just by nature as an athlete, you're going to work hard to the pretty good extent.
Mm-hmm.
What you have to do, and this is the simplest way to explain it. He has to change their behaviors when he's not around. So that means you're doing two things at once versus say you take over Ohio State, those kids, they just know. That's why I was always saying, Scott Frost coming out of COVID or during COVID is totally different things when you had to send people home and come back, hanging out for a couple of days and not doing anything or for a couple of weeks was maybe the norm around here versus there. So it takes some time. And at the end of the day, you're 5-1. I think when you started the season, you say you're right on target at 5-1. Mm-hmm. Most people. I mean, obviously, ideally, be 6-0. But 5-1, you're on. You're at or ahead of schedule. And then now you got a huge game up here in Minneapolis, or where you can become bowl eligible, probably quicker than, or Mike Riley's team was the only one that was faster, but in recent history. And then we're going to see really what you do when you got house money in your pocket.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen that before.
I've seen that before.
Where did you see it?
You know exactly where I saw it.
You saw it in
at
Vegas.
At the Bay.
That's exactly where you saw it. Once you get a hole, then you could be a little bit more aggressive. It's because
Yeah. Then
you got to be very diligent when you're doing your thing early in the game.
Stay true to your principles. Know who you are.
Get the
trust
lead.
The process. Get the lead.
And then you put the dagger in the heart. And so that's, look, they got a tremendous opportunity for themselves. And, there's a lot of, questions, but I think it's just also a lot of smoke screens. And so, they got to really focus in and do what they got to do and ultimately go out there, put their best foot forward. And Minnesota's going to try to defend their home turf. They're going to try to have Nebraska leave with the same record as they would be or as they would have, which would be 5-2 after the game. And Nebraska's got to try their hardest and
save big money on all your electrical needs at Menards. From wire, tools, testers, and more, Southwire is the perfect choice for your next electrical project. They offer innovative products to help you get your project done right. Hurry in today and save big on all Southwire products at Menards. Plus. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big money
at Menards. And put Minnesota a little bit in the hole, at home.
Let's go ahead and hit on a few players from Nebraska and Maryland. What we saw, what we liked, maybe what we didn't. Let's start especially with what we liked. Let's start with Emmett Johnson, Jay. Big story, probably his best game at Nebraska. And it's nice to see that, hey, guess what? Nebraska's not the only team that has issues stopping the run. Maryland was really bad. Emmett Johnson was really good.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was Emmett just played his butt off. Now, I think the line blocked a little bit better. I think they found, they played a little bit, or they blocked better in the run. I think Nebraska did some things offensively to put them in positions where they had to, make some tackles. Maryland's extremely young up front on defense, so that plays well for, or bodes well for Nebraska. And then Emmett was balling out of control. This was the game that he did it last week against Michigan State. He was the four quarters and very efficient. He did it again, and you got to tip your hat to him because I think he really, stepped up and solidified himself and opened some eyes. But I think it's probably part of what he was expecting and knowing in his own mind. And so for him, it's back to work, I'm sure. Obviously it's, you got a big game. He's going back home and everybody knows that. But
already announced as the game captain today.
Yeah. I mean, that's all fine and all that, but he did his thing. There ain't no doubt about it. There's no denying that he was the dude.
Other guys that did their thing for Nebraska on offense, the two transfer receivers led Nebraska in catches between Isaiah Hunter and Dane Key. It was 9 for 168 and 3 of Nebraska's 4 touchdowns. Dane Key did his thing, steady as she goes, plus the big play at the end to win it for Nebraska. But yeah, I'm going to stop on Isaiah Hunter for just a second. Officially a game breaker. Officially. Back-to-back weeks on a similar, maybe the exact same play call. And when I was here on postgame after Michigan, I was talking about Ja'Cory Barney Jr., right? He's a really good player. Can he take the next step? He hasn't yet. And Isaiah Hunter has. Back-to-back weeks, those screens that he's taken for touchdowns, Stanley Morgan Jr. doesn't do that. Samori Toure doesn't do that. Trey Palmer wasn't asked to do that, but that's the last guy, right? And so as much as I love Ja'Cory Barney Jr. as a player, as many good things as he's done for Nebraska in special teams this year, as one of the leading receivers last year and what he did against Michigan, to me, Isaiah Hunter is the game breaker on Nebraska's offense more than Ja'Cory Barney Jr. Again, it's not a knock on Ja'Cory Barney Jr. and what he's done, but whether it's other guys not making the right block to spring Barney on similar plays, for whatever reason, Ja'Cory Barney hasn't had that touchdown like Isaiah Hunter has had in back-to-back weeks. To me, Isaiah Hunter is the dude in that receiving core as of today.
Yeah, well, he's been the most consistent, though. And when you look at the way he goes about his business and his skill set is significantly different than Barney, than J.D. Spielman, than Toure. Because I think when he came from Cal, being a freshman, you're like, all right, he had a good year, and that's kind of like luck. But when you see him, he's a big dude now. Like he's put together.
He outran that angle.
But the thing is that you have to understand he's powerful. It's a different type of speed with him. And
it's the type of speed and power that Nebraska needs to take the next step. It's great to have one Isaiah Hunter. Best teams have two.
You ain't doing that against a big time competition.
But you can't do it unless you have an Isaiah Hunter.
But you ain't doing it even if you do. It's not happening when you play against the real dudes. But what he can do is bust a 30 yard on him, a 40 yard on him, which is essentially the same thing or whatever, 20 plus yards. Here's where I think it's apparent, right? Okay. So Hunter versus, or you could say, okay, Dane Key against Banks, upgrade Dane Key. Ja'Cory Barney. Sorry, I shouldn't be killing his name like that. So this is my little dude, Barney, 2025 through 2024.
Upgrade.
Hunter.
From Nair.
Nair. Supreme upgrade. And it's not necessarily because Nair's bigger. He probably is faster if he got out here on O Street. Okay. But it's here.
Yeah.
So
for those of you who can't see on stream, Jay pointed to his
temple. Because mindset.
Mm-hmm.
Because then here's where the little cherry on top of the, I guess, the asterisk is. Hunter can do a little bit of key as well. You've seen that against Cincinnati, right? Mm-hmm. He made the kind of over the shoulder catch, like a back shoulder fade. I don't know what it was. It was kind of like, because Dylan threw it from almost, you know, from one hash out to the sidelines, but it was a 50-50 ball.
Mm-hmm.
So now that's where things open. And that's where, you know, in order for Jacory Barney to get busy like that and have this type of run, he's going to have to make six or seven guys miss because he's in the middle of the field all the time.
Yeah.
Whereas Hunter is, you come over there out of your, you come out of stack as a defensive lineman, you're jogging. Oh, Jay's going to get him. Next thing you know, nobody's getting him. That's where you're able to punch holes in the defense from an explosive part. But that's why you have a light box, and that's where Emmett Johnson did get off.
Yeah.
And so they got to continue to do that. And obviously teams are going to, I mean, I'm sure Minnesota is going to rep that play. Because essentially the last three times Nebraska's ran that play, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Saturday and then two times against Michigan State. Two of them have been house calls. The very first one was essentially a shoestring tackle to start the second half against Michigan State that should have been a house call.
Yeah.
So now, you know, it opened. Now this might open up for Dane Key. The best thing about Saturday was that Dane Key was able to kind of do the same things that you saw, like, in Kentucky, 50-50 catch. He gets really good hand-eye coordination, balance, and he's steady and sturdy, and he made a big-time catch to win the game.
And that's why I think you go get a guy like that, for his steadiness in those big moments. He made the key play for Nebraska there at the end of the game, taking him from down four, ultimately up three. We'll definitely talk defense as we move throughout the course of the show, but while we're on the offense, Jay, I know you like it more because it's Nebraska, but if you're an opposing linebacker and you see the toe drag swag that Luke Lindenmeyer and Heinrich Harburg have,
Lindenmeyer's was pretty sweet, man. And, you know, it was kind of one of those things like you throw it out of bounds and you throw it. And whether Dylan had a rabbit's foot in his back pocket or not, I mean, literally, listen, 14 had a bad day at the office. I know he had pick six, but he had a bad day at the office. It literally was a fingertip away, and it was good. And that's great to be able to kind of float it over there. Or feathered in there, and then it's really good concentration in a tight spot like that. And, you know, obviously that's something that they practice, but that's excellent. And then, look, Lindenmeyer has done tremendously well for himself, you know what I'm saying, over the last mm-hmm. 2 years. And you got to think, you go from, you know, it was an excellent play call against Illinois. It was just probably, you know, it was just a little off target. He was wide open. He's made some – I saw it the first year where he was the move guy. And got a, you know, a couple opportunities. You can tell he can run and all that. And then he just improved in, you know, his overall game. And it pays off. Hard work pays off, and it's good for him to make a huge play. They needed that play.
They needed the touchdown. They needed Harburg's catch, too. I mean, to get him set up with goal to go. Yeah, those are both huge.
This is where you're able to have some depth, right? And you see the maturation of Heinrich Harburg to tight end, where you wish you kind of had him for another year. To see if you could really do something. So when you think about the whole dynamics of it, they were able to get their stuff together in order to win this game.
Mm-hmm.
Get it together. And that's generally what you have to tell. I mean, I've done it in basketball. Right? Get it together, right? Wake up, you know? Mm-hmm. And you listen, Maryland turned teams over all season long. This is nothing new to them.
Mm-hmm.
They always have had DBs and skill position guys. We can break down all that stuff besides the main characters and the skill position guys, you got to give the offensive line credit.
Rule said it was the best game, especially relative to competition.
Yeah. Well, they came in leading the Big Ten in sacks. They got the, you know, falling asleep sack at the before the half. Otherwise, they did a pretty good job.
That was the only sack. That was it.
Yeah, but I'm just saying pressures. You know, it's almost was like Dylan was too comfortable, probably. You know what I mean? Where you went there and then you came late back there, and that was the first interception. I mean, that's all. I mean, you're pulling that, you know, you're just grasping at straws, but, you know, you got to give him credit.
Yeah, four touchdowns, three interceptions for Raiola. Really good completion percentage. Again, just about 70%. And Jay, I think more than anything, It was good to see Nebraska handle that adversity, get up big. Matt Rhule says, of course, you get a 10-point lead and a 14-point lead in back-to-back weeks. You can't be giving those up in the Big Ten. Is Nebraska playing with too much fire, or is this just the nature of football, especially in the Big Ten, that, you know what, you're going to have your ups and your downs, and it's a positive sign that Nebraska's handling it better this year?
A little bit of both, but that's just what this is the learning process, the learning how to punish teams. Learning how to punish teams that has a freshman quarterback that runs out of bounds on fourth down and sticks the ball past the fourth down while he's 3 yards out of bounds. You got to punish teams like that that give you a free possession, right, and more time on the clock. And then how does that go to two or three series down the road when you're up 14 points or 10 points or in any game? Then you might get a field goal and put together a methodical drive and kick a field goal. You might have to work a little harder, but that gut punch of adding points to that lead pays off late in the game where they're desperate. You get sacks, turnovers, then let's be more aggressive. So I think putting all the pieces of the puzzle together is probably what they're trying to do. And it's, you know, part of the learning process, but it's easier to kind of talk to them. I'm assuming they're having some meetings or whatever, 5-1, and knowing that you're going on the road on primetime TV. It's essentially a free bowl game come Friday night.
That it is. Nebraska and Minnesota been since 2015, since Nebraska's won in Minneapolis. Tracy Claes was the head coach, the interim there for Minnesota.
Do you remember his shining moment, Tracy Claes? You know what his signature, what he's known for?
Eating
a popsicle.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Mr. Popsicle, and Tracy Claes.
He hadn't missed many, man. It's a good opportunity. It's a great opportunity. This is not the typical Minnesota team. Mm-hmm. Nebraska comes in heavily favored. They do. They'll be heavily favored by the time they kick off.
Mm-hmm. So it's a business trip.
Yeah. You got to validate it. They're going to be tough. I mean, you know, they got good players. I mean, they got pride in what they're doing, but you got to go beat them.
We'll talk more about that throughout the course of the show and, of course, throughout the rest of the week. So for Friday, we'll have an hour of Old School. Then we'll get into our 3-hour official A1 Automotive Ticket Tailgate pregame show. But with the carnage at Penn State, we turn our attention to Happy Valley. Nebraska could stand to benefit. A couple of highly rated recruits tied to the Nittany Lions have backed off their commitments and could be visiting Nebraska in the near future. To break it all down, we got Brian Munson of Husker Online with us next.
Back to Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Welcome back into this Old School on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com. Austin Orman with you here. We're headed to our Aloe Fiber VIP line. Aloe Fiber is where they understand the importance of exceptional service with local heart. It's 3:30 on a Monday, which means we're talking Nebraska football recruiting with none other than Brian Munson of Husker Online. Brian, the winds of change are swirling. Have swirled across college sports already. 9 vacancies in a Division I college football, the most recent of which, or certainly the most notable, is Penn State. Now, before we get to the Nebraska coaching ties to Penn State, you're on to talk about the players, right, and the prospects. And you've recently written about a couple of players with Penn State ties that Nebraska can get involved with. Let's start with the one that we know is coming to Lincoln, and that is a decommitted wide receiver, Khalil Taylor. What do you know about that young man and Nebraska's in with him?
Yeah, so this was pretty big news. It was later last week. I think it was pre-Franklin actually being fired, which was one of the most interesting parts about it. And Khalil came out and announced his decommitment. Well, obviously he's like right in PSU's backyard. So this could not have been an easy thing for him to walk away from a commitment being a 2027 wide receiver. But as soon as he saw it, obviously like Trey Taylor was all over it. And in fact, I put like Trey Taylor's tweet about it, like saying like, I'm all over this, like I'm gonna call him now, or I'm getting in touch with him, or I'm getting involved, or something along those lines. And Khalil confirmed this morning that there is indeed a trip planned for him to be in Nebraska the end of October for the Northwestern game. Pretty significant turn of events there, obviously, because I think Nebraska's trying to do what's best they can. That 2027 class is still ranked number 5 in the country. I think that obviously Trey Taylor is still trying to, you know, do his best to have his hands all over it and be in touch with all those guys. So it's going to be fun to watch, because I think Trey is scheduled to be in Lincoln that weekend for Northwestern, to hear kind of like what the thoughts are, you know, and how things work between those guys when they're both together in Lincoln. So pretty big deal, I think, that, you know, that Nebraska, and obviously they offered him, they offered Khalil, I think, like in November of 2023, which I think would have been like at the end of his freshman year, his freshman season, in fact. So he's had a commitment from the Huskers for a while, you know, but it goes back to Adam DeMichael, you know, that's there with the university too, because he's got really Matt Rhule and Adam DeMichael and specifically have good connections into Pittsburgh.
Fascinating there. And then another guy from Penn State in the skill position core that Nebraska is now interested, Kamon Spell, the number one running back really in the consensus ratings, decommits from Penn State, and then within the last day he gets an offer from Nebraska and he gets an offer from Oregon. Brian, we've talked a little bit about the state of Nebraska's running back room and their targets in the 2027 class. Does this shake up Nebraska's 2027 running back board at all?
Oh, I think it obviously has to. I think Nebraska's got to be very interested in hearing what, you know, he's thinking about. I think it's, you know, one of those things too, where, you know, provided that Matt Rhule is going to remain the head coach at Nebraska, having a guy that, you know, that has maybe running a program, you know, the way that like maybe PSU fans wish that it was happening there in Happy Valley and State College PA, you know, he might feel pretty at home with what's going on. And obviously, you know, he's kind of a Big Ten, wants to go play in the Big Ten from being committed to Penn State. I think that, you know, what EJ is doing so far this season is brilliant. I think Nebraska can take that and sell it, you know, when it comes to running back recruits and letting them know like what type of potential there is in the offense and what it is they could do if they came to Lincoln. So I think this is really kind of a perfect storm, you know, for Nebraska to kind of circle back, you know, on a couple of these guys, you know, and you didn't mention it, but, you know, like Josiah Teasley, the Virginia wide receiver that had just visited Nebraska, you know, a week ago, had, you know, an official visit set up to Penn State as well. Now all of a sudden, you know, wonder where that's kind of at in the first place. So it might actually help out Nebraska for a 2026 guy that Penn State was also like in competition to with Nebraska to go get. So there's a bunch of things happening on this front, that's for sure. And it's definitely created a lot of moving parts, you know, more than what we've been talking about the last 4 or 5 weeks. Let's just put it that way.
And then Brian, I think we have to address the Nittany Lion-sized elephant sitting in the room here, is that Nebraska's current head coach has ties back to Penn State. I think Husker fans would love to hear that news, that Nebraska is in position to potentially capitalize or at least get a foot in the door with all these top prospects, except that the school that these guys are decommitting from or are not as interested anymore only has maybe some of the strongest ties in the country to the guy currently in charge of running Nebraska's program. If you just from what you've seen and heard from Matt Rhule, assuming that there is mutual interest of some degree between him and Penn State, you know, what do you think Matt Rhule is doing in terms of recruiting right now? Do you think he's the type of guy to keep recruiting to Nebraska, or in this situation, is he recruiting to himself? Like, hey, I like you as a player wherever it is I end up, whether it's Nebraska or Penn State, I want you there with me. And where does that leave the rest of Matt Rhule's coaching staff in terms of recruiting right now?
No, I think it's recruiting to Nebraska. I think that if there is a way of kind of doing like what you said, like recruiting to me and trying to kind of get things, you know, more towards the coach than it is the school, that would be unfortunate, but I don't think that that's really in Coach Rhule's nature to kind of do that. But there's just an ethical quality, you know, to that. I don't think he's got that gene in him to do that. Plus, I think that, you know, and this is just me kind of saying this, I think the coach is important to a college player's decision, whatever, about where to go to, but it should be so far down the list. like, you should make a decision, you know, that doesn't even kind of consider who's sitting in that office. You should feel 100% great about everything else that's kind of going on there, even if like athletics was taken out of the equation entirely. So, while I know that that's not necessarily the case, and I'm, you know, probably just putting my parental hat on and kind of saying that, I don't feel like Matt Rhule would be capable of kind of twisting this a little bit and saying, recruit to me, and if I stay here, great, and if I end up going, then great. I basically check both boxes. I just feel like he's still in on the whole this is a Nebraska type thing. I think Nebraska felt like, you know, from the very beginning when they wanted to slow down in July, they kind of felt like these days were coming. Like, so there would be some underachieving teams, and there have been. And I think some of them have been very predictable. They haven't necessarily made the coaching change, like, you know, down in Gainesville. You know, that's another one. You know, but I think that there have been very predictable hot seats around the country. It just didn't really seem like it was going to be Franklin in the preseason number two team in the country. So things have definitely gone way, way wrong at State College. And it's opened up some opportunity for Nebraska in terms of recruits, and maybe even some opportunity for Matt Rhule to go back home if that's what he decides to do.
We're talking with Brian Munson of Husker Online here on 93.7. The Ticket. Brian joins us from Husker Online. He's our guy that we take a peek behind the curtain of Nebraska recruiting with. The other interesting thing, I think, from Matt Rhule's press conference today, Brian, was that he talked about, you know, he wants Nebraska to be at the forefront of spending, and especially on the roster. And he talked about $30 to $40 million. Let's take that through the lens of a high school recruit. When you hear a head coach say that he wants his program, which again, as of now, is still Nebraska, to push toward the forefront and start getting a $30 or $40 million roster, should high school kids, you know, hear that and have their ears perk up a little bit? Or is that something where they maybe have to be a little cautious and say, well, maybe more of that is in terms of the NIL to those already established players, and that's not necessarily for me right away?
Yeah, it's tricky. It's tricky. We don't really know how it all gets kind of made up. I think the stronger message is being sent right now to the Nebraska fan base. I think that there have been some very generous families to date that have kind of almost single-handedly kind of put Nebraska, of course, where they are since Matt Rhule had gotten to Lincoln. But I think that, you know, as as you hear that number, staggering number, $30 million to $40 million, I don't think it's sustainable, you know, for a handful of families to kind of bear the burden of basically having to support everything that's going on there in the football department. So I think what it really was, it was kind of more a collective message to Husker Nation, like, hey, if we want to take this thing forward and you want me to stay here, these are the things, of course, that I'm concerned about. And without kind of like really poking the bear and saying we need fundraising, I think he was kind of saying, you know, there's a need for fundraising that goes beyond just what's kind of been happening in recent years.
It's a big number. And of course, it's going to be different for Nebraska versus, say, an Ohio State. And that's kind of the deal, Brian, is that Ohio State and its roster, Ohio State didn't go get a bunch of guys out of the transfer portal to win the title last year. I mean, obviously, Caleb Downs out of Alabama and then the starting quarterback, Will Howard. But other than that, Ohio State kind of followed what Matt Rhule wants his program to be in terms of identifying, recruiting, and developing those players on campus. How do you think we see the price tag change maybe for developed players versus the, you know, mercenary rental transfer portal guys? Are we entering a phase in college football where, you know, the high school guys can start earning more than the transfer portal guys, or will the quick fixes always make the quickest buck?
I think the quick fixes are really going to always make kind of the quickest buck, because I think it's showing a gap, I think, in the roster and somewhere in the depth chart. Maybe a guy transferred out, maybe a guy's been injured, maybe he's taken a medical and he's leaving the game. I think what Matt Rhule, you know, and Ryan Day, would love to get back to is just this more organic, you know, development kind of way. And I think that, that you always have the best culture, I think, when that kind of happens, as opposed to, you know, basically a melting pot of these 1 year, you know, rentals that you want to put together. And hopefully you can, and it's a very talented group, almost like all-star like, but you just don't know how they're going to kind of come together with the team chemistry. I think you'd rather have that team chemistry in place and add a player that passes like all or checks all the boxes for you, like from an evaluation perspective. You could put him in the locker room and it's, you know, it doesn't, there's no grinding of the gears. There's no need to kind of really make them feel at home because they know that they feel like, you know, that that's a group that's destined to go play really good football, and they need that person to kind of step into a role. So kind of a Rocco thing, you know, coming off a college football playoff a year ago. That being said, I think ultimately what these coaches hope happens is exactly like what you said. It's like a more of a 95% to 5% kind of thing with the classes, that you get all of your guys basically in your high school classes and you get them into the program. There's going to be some filtering that happens, obviously, but that there's a smaller number of those 1 year rentals or 2 year rental guys, because you lock up a lot of money. And Nebraska did. They locked up a lot of money in the month of January when it came to all the transfers that they brought in.
That they did. That's your look at Nebraska football recruiting with Brian Munson of Husker Online. I know we're about 12 days out yet, Brian, but anything on your radar for Nebraska Northwestern aside from Khalil Taylor at the end of the month?
So Khalil, and I think that one thing that's dangerous here, and I wanted to ask Khalil this earlier, but I let it go. Start time. What's your kickoff time, you know, for Northwestern? I think that's really going to be something very interesting to kind of watch. The later, obviously, it is, the more players that they potentially could kind of bring in there during that weekend. But no, not yet. And I think the start time has been one of those kind of inhibitors to keep us from kind of finding out more people that would be interested in coming in during that point. I'm assuming that Taylor has a very clear understanding that he can get out on Friday night or very early on Saturday morning and make it to Lincoln. Otherwise, he would not have told me that this morning.
There you have it. Stay tuned for more on Husker Online from our friend Brian Munson. Find him on Twitter at @BrianMunson_ as well. Brian, thanks as always for your insight. We'll catch up again with more maybe clarity on this saga next week.
Be good, buddy. We'll see you.
He always says be good, and I can't ever promise that, but we do our best. Brian joined us on our Aloe Fiber VIP line. Aloe Fiber is where they understand the importance of exceptional service with local heart. Aloe is the official internet provider of the Huskers as well. We will go to break, bring Jay Foreman back in, talk some Nebraska defense before we turn the page to the big question. Will Matt Rhule be coaching Nebraska football in 2026? Hear everything that Matt Rhule had to say about the Penn State job opening, his current gig at Nebraska, and plenty more. That's all coming up right at 4.
Back to old school with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Wrapping up hour one of old school, Lost Norm and Jay Foreman with you here. Before we get to, again, the key question of the day, of the week, maybe of the rest of Nebraska's season, Jay, do you want to give some flowers to the defense for Nebraska? Again, you give up 31 points, not exactly a banner day. 24 of them, I guess, the defense gave up at the 7 from the pick 6. But two players I think really deserve to be highlighted. Number one, Javen Wright. Another great game for him. He ends up with 12 tackles, 9 of them solo after a great game last week. And this is kind of the mixed bag because he didn't show up in the stat sheet, didn't record a single tackle at all. That's Williams Nwarney. No stats, but Pro Football Focus credited him with 8 quarterback pressures, the most among all Big Ten defenders from week 7. Kind of hard to make that big of an impact on a game and have no stats, which you'd like to see for a guy that's supposed to be a productive defensive end for Nebraska. But I thought even despite the lack of traditional counting stats, Williams Nwarney made his impact felt for a second straight week.
Yeah, I mean, stats don't always, you know, tell the whole truth. And, you know, when you have that many pressures, you're active. You know, when you have a linebacker group that's very active. You have 22 tackles on the stat sheet and one tackle for loss between your linebacker group. There's not a lot of plays to be made. You play two linebackers, you know, per, you know, defensive personnel group. They're getting pretty active. And so, look, you know, Williams Nwori is, you know, slowly but surely, I wouldn't say even say slowly anymore, but he's rounded into shape and trying to, you know, continue to play up to his potential. You got to think he's still a freshman. Mm-hmm. And so he's out there. Every day is a learning process for him. You know, he's, you know, I'll say this, you know, from when he came in the spring, you know, you saw him, obviously his physical tools and walking around is, you know, obviously what sets him apart. But I think the, you know, his dedication to the weight room and really changing his body has led to his production, stat sheet or not. So, you know, you need efforts like that. You need your guys to, you know, really you need those type of pressures to get that quarterback from Maryland off of his mark, because he was uncomfortable all day. And for him being a freshman and a pretty quarterback, you know, allowed for, you know, him to really struggle at times. And that's what was a big part of Nebraska's defense playing well.
Excuse me. Nebraska gets the final stop as well, forcing the turnover on down. So Nebraska takes one snap and kneels it out. Jay, and maybe I'll talk about this on the whiteboard. And if you are, go ahead and stop me. But a player, a concept that I thought Nebraska made its splash plays on defensively is one that we've seen Nebraska run on offense quite a bit, except that Maryland didn't put their tight end in motion. Sometimes you'll see Nebraska use its tight end to take out that backside guy out of motion. Yeah. While Maryland kept their guy at a standstill on the opposite side of the line of scrimmage, made the tight end come way across, but Cade Pedchok's tackle for loss, and then Dawson McCullough's, or Dasan McCullough's tackle for loss there at the start of the fourth quarter, they beat the tight end to the spot. Yeah. I thought that was pretty impressive on those two plays from those two guys.
Yeah, and it was that was a mishap on Maryland's schematic or scheme wise, and you know it's very surprising. Pep Hamilton's a well traveled, well respected play caller, so the design of the play was wrong, or the play was good. The design in that, you know, obviously was wrong, and the execution.
But Nebraska made it wrong too.
Correct. And it's good because you don't want a defensive end seeing it and just standing there and then he, you know, kind of waiting to get blocked. And so, I mean, it's probably something that Maryland's going to make an adjustment to, but you know, they can make an adjustment all they want after, you know, this Saturday, because Nebraska was able to make some pretty big, those were momentum shifting plays.
Yeah.
During the drive. Mm-hmm. And it's obviously something that they were trying to do. And Nebraska made them wrong both times.
Penn State made an adjustment at head coach. Will Nebraska need to make an adjustment at head coach?
I feel bad, though. No,
do you?
I do. I like James Franklin. Mm-hmm. I'm just was mad at him because every time we went in light skin for the win, we didn't do it.
It did not happen.
I'm still surprised, though.
Let's talk about it.
I'm surprised, but I'm not surprised.
Let's talk about it. We'll take the Penn State angle first, and then here's the question. Will Matt Rhule be coaching Nebraska football in 2026?
We're going to call him right now.
That's ahead at 4 and 5 o'clock.